This is October 1st, and this is the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. And welcome back to the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky, and welcome to the regular season. Oh, baby, can you believe it? Can you believe it? It is back. It's been way too long, it feels like. Well, I mean, it was a short off season, but if hockey could be all the time, it'd be great. But it's finally back. The regular season is back. The Bruins start in two nights. Some other teams start literally tomorrow night. I am so excited, and I'm so excited to see sort of what this podcast becomes and what it can become with you guys during this year. This is going to be a huge year for you, for me, for everybody. It's going to be fun, and I'm really excited to have you along for the ride. So to start this season, to kick this real regular season off, I had my good friend Pete Blackburn of CBS Sports come on, and we previewed the Bruins season. And at the end, we sort of, as we were wrapping up, we were like, oh, how about that Metropolitan Division? That's looking pretty contentious, right? So we talked about that for the last 5 or 6 minutes. So if you want to hang on for that, that's also really good at the end. But this is a Bruins season preview, and we had a lot of hot takes. We had a lot of predictions. Hopefully they're all right for our sake. You might not want them to be right for your sake. So we'll see. But I think you'll like this episode. And let's get into it. Here's my conversation and my season preview with Pete Blackburn. And we're here with Pete Blackburn. Pete, what is up?
Not too much. Getting ready for another season. It's a couple days away.
Isn't that nuts? It's here.
I'll say this, like the off season usually feels longer than this one. And I'll tell you why. I think it's because the Bruins lost the Stanley Cup and it took a while to get over that. And, I kind of just like pushed hockey away for a couple months. And so I think it kind of shortened the off season. I didn't get to the point where I was like, okay, I'm dying for hockey to come back. But now that it's right on the horizon, I'm very, very excited for it.
Well, yeah, and also you have every NHL team, every NHL team's fans in your Twitter mentions like daily, whereas I just have Bruins people. You have everybody. Yeah. You're pissing off Toronto fans. You're pissing off every possible fan base you could imagine. So it's for you. It's there's a constant like it's a barrage of people, and you're just one man. You're more powerful than them, but it's just one man. It's so cool to have hockey back. It was such a short off season. I mean, really, because for us Bruins people, I mean, it hurt your Bruins guy. So, You know, 2.5 month off season, not much. But it's crazy that it's back this week. So we're going to spend this episode sort of previewing the season, doing the old general stuff. If you disagree with us, if you want to let us know, go for it. But we're going to start in a different place that I didn't expect to go until a picture went viral. I don't have the tweet up in front of me, but after Saturday's preseason game, after the Bruins killed Chicago Blackhawks.
Not the Chicago Blackhawks, the Rockford IceHogs.
The Rockford IceHogs, the AHL affiliate. A picture went viral, and it had nothing to do with the game. It was the seats and the stands at TD Garden. No legroom, none. And I have a friend who was at that game. I DM'd him. I said, hey, like, did you feel the same way? He was sitting 7 rows from the ice. He said, hell yeah. I was sitting spread eagle the entire time. There's no room. Pete, how quickly, if it already hasn't, how quickly has this become a PR nightmare for the Bruins?
Oh, I mean, it's very bad. It's optically, it's terrible because it just looks like a cash grab, which it absolutely is. Shocker.
100%.
The Jacobs family just wants to line their pockets a little bit more. I can't believe it. But I mean, like I heard rumblings that the leg room was being taken away a little bit. It was being reduced. Not in my wildest dreams would I ever have imagined that it was that bad. And the tweet that went viral was like, there's about 6 inches of leg room. And honestly, that did not seem like that much of an exaggeration. There was inches of leg room, and that's on the lower level. And so from what I've been told, the balcony is a little bit better than that. There's a little bit more room, which just goes to prove my stance on hockey seating in general. Like it's better to be higher up at the balcony.
100%.
The balcony is the place that you want to be. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously disappointing because this is a move and they're marketing it as like, we did this for the fans. Here's an upgrade, HDR seating, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this is clearly not for the fans because this looks like an absolute nightmare. And I also just think that like the black seats kind of take a little bit of personality out of the garden. Like I liked the gold seats. They might have been an eyesore for some people, but it was a defining characteristic of the Bruins home building. So I'm a little bit disappointed that we went with the black seats.
So the black seats haven't affected me as much. What I didn't like was last season when they changed the lighting in the seats. Because I don't like the Staples Center vibe going on there. They did the same thing with the Celtics. I didn't like it. I like it to be really light. You can see the fans going nuts. It's more on top of you rather than like not happening. So my issue wasn't even the gold seats. It was more what they did last offseason, which nobody talked about, which was the lighting. On the part of the legroom, what a start for the Jacobs kids owning the Bruins. Like,
yeah.
They're not even a month into this news being public, and they are already being deemed complete cash grabbers. And I think that is the biggest takeaway coming from this, that, you know, Jeremy Jacobs was known not to spend a lot of money. He liked to, you know, nickel and dime every fan. Oh. This is outrageous. Because
the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
No, there's a clear, they've been influenced a lot by their father. I just can't believe, though, to the extent that it was done. Like, if you minimize like them a little bit, I mean, that's like Spirit Airlines.
No, oh, yeah.
That is so, so bad.
Do you watch Succession?
I don't.
On HBO? Okay, no. So like Succession is about like this media conglomerate, and it's led by the father, who's like this very shrewd, very ruthless, but smart businessman, and like his fucking idiot kids. Like there's like one kid who's somewhat smart and sort of shrewd business wise, but the rest of them are just like complete idiots. So like I feel like the Jacobs family and the Bruins organization is basically Succession. The kids get put in charge and they think they're like, oh, we're gonna make this very like apt business move, and it's just a complete PR nightmare right off the bat because they're idiots.
It's I cannot believe it. It's not even a game into the regular season, they're already having problems.
And so here's the thing that I would be maybe okay with is like you add I don't know how many seats they added, but I'm like, let's ballpark it and say they got 500 extra seats or something like that. 500 to 600 extra seats. You're gonna drop the prices? Because it's like $80 to get in the building.
Yes.
For a regular season game. So if you're gonna drop the prices and take away a little bit of legroom, I'm okay with that. Like if it's gonna cost me like $20 less to get in the building, sure. But it absolutely is not going to. And
no.
They're just gonna try to make more money.
Yes, and they're just gonna. I haven't looked at the ticket prices, but they're just gonna raise the ticket prices because the Bruins were in the Stanley Cup final last year, and it's a hell. Let's do it. So, I think that they're gonna have to do something soon because this isn't gonna be a problem that just kind of like people don't care about, because you have new people coming in every single game. They're posting the pictures on Twitter of their legroom. Everyone's gonna retweet it. Everyone's gonna quote tweet it. It's gonna be all over Reddit. It's gonna be all over everywhere. You got to do something. So I don't know if they're going to – I mean, can you – what real work can you do during the season for this?
You can't. And it's not like a – it's not a situation where it's like seats at the end of the row. Like say the aisles were too small and people were complaining about it that you can't squeeze by. There's a somewhat easy solution there. You just take out the seat at the end of the aisle and then problem solved. When you've got – like minimal legroom in between two rows of seats, you're not going to take out an entire row of seats, and you can't just push back seats. So it seems like this is going to be an issue that we're going to have to deal with all year long.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago when the Islanders first moved to Barclays, you know, they had seats that you couldn't see one half of the ice.
Right.
And that, I don't know whatever happened with that, but that was just kind of like big for a little bit and then it went away. So, which this, you can see the whole ice. Your view is not restricted. Your legroom and in your enjoyment and your comfort is. So I don't. This is weird. I think this is going to follow them the whole year because people aren't going to shut up about it. And I don't blame them. Like, go for it. Tweet every, like, let them know.
And, you know, I honestly think that it's probably going to become an issue just in terms of, like, fan fights. Because they're going to be literally right on top of each other. And we all know how people get at Bruins games a lot of times. It's a lot of drunk, angry people. and so I honestly think that it will lead to like a rise in like in seat altercations.
Yeah. And just you're so close to the person next to you, the person in front of you, the person behind you, that it's like, you know, if they're rubbing up on you the whole
basically
game.
It's a mosh pit.
Yes. It's a mosh pit. And it looks so uncomfortable. It really looks so uncomfortable. But there's a season. There's a game on the ice that we have to preview this year. There's 82 games in the regular season. So my first question for you is, what's the biggest problem facing the Bruins? We might have just tackled it. We might have just faced the biggest problem.
Angry fans
and no leg room might be the biggest problem facing the Bruins this year. But if I had to press you for the biggest problem on the ice, what would it be?
I mean, I think the most pressing thing is you know, the right side. Obviously, they didn't really address that second line right wing, and maybe it's Charlie Coyle who ends up there. But then you get another problem where you might be dealing with a depth issue down the middle. So I would say it's some combination of finding a consistent solid winger for David Krejci, or like adding additional depth, because they did lose depth during the off season, and you're taking a chance on some of these younger guys who might not be ready to step up and fill those roles. We're sort of back to square one where we were last year.
Yeah. The storyline hasn't changed. The depth is probably the team's biggest issue. Another issue I think is, and I've been saying this for a while, they're probably going to start slow. I wouldn't be surprised if they started slow out the gate. And
well, they have a road trip right out of the gate. I think they
have
three or four games on the road before they head home.
It's Dallas, Arizona, and then it's Vegas, Colorado, one of the two.
Yeah.
And then they're home against like Anaheim, I believe.
Their home opener is against the Devils.
Devils, then Anaheim, then it's Tampa Bay, and then they go to Toronto for a home and home.
Okay.
So and then they play St. Louis at the end of the month, the Rangers at the end of the month. They have a very tough October. Totally would not be surprised if they start out slow. I don't know. I just, you know, the Stanley Cup hangover is going to be hanging around. Well, not that they didn't win, but, you know, they were in it, and there was a short off season. They have a lot of veterans. So right. I think the biggest problem is depth, as you said, or starting really, really slow. One thing, and I just kind of mentioned it, the Atlantic Division is really good. And not just the top three teams.
No.
The rest of the division, the Panthers, long-term that Bobrovsky contract will suck. But for now, it's Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, he's a playoff-caliber goalie. He will get you to the playoffs. That was the biggest problem last year. The Sabres have to come through at some point. Is one of the three teams at the top of the Atlantic going to get pushed by somebody else? Pushed out by somebody else?
No, I still think the top three teams are going to stick, but I do believe the Panthers are going to end up really close to like that third spot. I think it'll be not necessarily neck and neck, but it'll be too close for comfort. And honestly, I think the Bruins are going to end up in that spot. I did my season preview for CBS Sports, and I had Tampa number one, Toronto number two, the Bruins three, and Florida four. And honestly, I put Montreal five. I think people are sleeping on Montreal. They've got a lot of good young players. They were pretty good last year. They're just a tough team to play against, and they've got some young talent, and they took a step in the right direction. But yeah, I think the Bruins and Florida could end up really close in standings by the end of the year. Obviously, I think the biggest concern if you're a Bruins fan is not Florida at four. It would be Toronto at two, because if you end up two and three, and you end up that third spot in the division is going to be a real pain in the ass, because you're going to have to go on the road in the first round of the playoffs.
Yes. So this hits at my next point. They play Toronto, and they're going to play Toronto again, most likely in the first round. That's going to happen.
It's insane that we're like 2 days before the start of the season, and we probably know who they're going to play in the first
round. That's a whole other topic of how I just hate the playoff system that the NHL has right now. I mean, part of why hockey's great is you never know who's going to win. But now with the playoff formatting, you know who's going to play who most likely, especially in the Atlantic. It's going to be Bruins and Maple Leafs. I was going to save this for the end, what I think the Bruins will do in the playoffs, but since we're talking about it now, I might as well just say it. I think they're out in the first round.
I think they're out in the first round if they get that three seed. I mean, obviously, it's tough to say, like, before the season even starts, like, I think they're out in the first round this year. But, like, if things go the way that I expect or the way that I'm kind of projecting, I think it would be tough for the Bruins this year to go into Toronto, be on the road, and win in seven. Like, I still think you can make all the jokes you want, and God knows I do all the time, but Toronto is a dangerous team, and Toronto's a dangerous team if they have home ice advantage in the first round of the playoffs.
Yes, so my thing is, I think Bruins probably finished there, because Toronto after this year is so uncertain, especially on defense. You have to think, the past 2 years the Bruins have narrowly squeaked by them in a seven-game series. The Bruins are coming off a Stanley Cup loss. Toronto's coming off two straight first-round losses. It's just kind of – and Toronto got better this offseason. Tyson Barrie is very good. Alexander Kerfoot, I don't care what the points are, is an upgrade from Nazem Kadri.
If it's necessarily an upgrade from Nazem Kadri, but I don't think that they took too far of a step back in that department, especially when you consider that Nazem Kadri's not going to goof his way out of the first round and give you a nice little bow-wrapped present. In the first round of the playoffs.
So that's where the upgrade comes. You're not going to get the stupid penalties, the power plays, because Toronto's penalty kill isn't that great. That's where a lot of that, you know, momentum came from for the Bruins in the past two playoff series. But just feels like the year. Just feels like that kind of year where they are, you know, they finish as the three seed. Toronto's strong. Toronto's window is, as I said, is kind of closing because they don't have really any cap space, and on defense, it's going to open up next year. Morgan Riley's the only guy they have locked down past this year. So I think – I got to be honest. I think this could be the year that they're out in the first round. And I said that to DJ Bean a few weeks ago, and he was like, you're 100% right. So I'm 100% right.
I wouldn't be shocked, but, I also think that we should maybe let it play out.
Well, it's a team preview show. We got to have fun. We got to throw our predictions out there. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But might as well throw my prediction out now. I'm not saying it's informed. I'm not saying it's the end all be all, but it's a prediction show. We got to do this. We got to preview the season. We got to talk about it. So who do you think your biggest breakout player is for the Bruins this year?
Well, I think that depends. Like, are we talking like first level breakout or second level breakout? Because like, I think that sort of gets convoluted sometimes. And like, is it going to be somebody that completely comes on and surprises us? Or is it somebody who makes the jump to being like the next level?
So that's a good question. I think it's the most progress in their own. Well, you stumped me. I think that it's sort of, I think it's sort of the jump to being a real piece of the franchise, if that makes any sense. And a jump in their game so much that it's like, so my breakout player, because I can't explain.
Okay, give me an example.
My breakout player would be Danton Heinen. Okay. I think Danton Heinen's going to have a breakout year. Yes, he's already kind of solidified his spot on the third line, but he's going to make that jump to second line production. Maybe I would say the 55-60 point range. That would be a breakout for him. Okay. That's sort of where I am with that. Now, if Pastrnak hits 100 points or, you know, more than that, let's say, that's obviously a breakout year for him, but
I don't think it is. I don't think it is, because I think people recognize right now that Pastrnak is capable of that.
Yes. So that's sort of where I'm getting at. It's expected that he continues his upward trend.
So like on the Heinen trade, on the Heinen train, Yeah, let's trade Dan Heinen.
Trade Dan Heinen now.
on the Heinen train. So I'll say Jake DeBrusque as like a second level breakout player, because Jake DeBrusque obviously had his struggles last year, a little bit of inconsistency, but he still finished with what is 27 goals.
Yeah,
like 27. high twenties goals. I think that he's capable of like 35. Maybe he sniffs the 40 mark, but I definitely think that he's capable of being like a 35, high 30s goal scorer. And I would consider that like a major jump for Jake DeBrusque. And so I'll pick him up front. And I think that Matt Grizzlick is going to solidify himself as a major piece on the back end for the Bruins, because I think that people sleep on – well, I don't want to say that, because I think people started to realize last year how good Matt Grizzlick is and how important he can be to this team. But I really think that he's in a space this year after the good year that he had last year and being in his mid-20s that he can make a solid jump to being a really, really valuable piece that people don't take for granted.
I couldn't agree more on the Grizzlick thing, because I think that there's no – I mean, he is one of the best skaters on that team. Nobody breaks out of their own end like he does. And you just feel like the point production is going to come with it at some point. And it feels like this might be the year.
And even if it doesn't, like you mentioned it, how good of a skater he is. And I think that you kind of see it across the league that guys like him who are mobile and can move and can skate and can close gaps are just like, that's the way that the defensive position is sort of transitioning to. I look at Vegas. Vegas's back end is not anything special. You look at the guys that they have on defense. Not a lot of great guys in terms of just like that'll jump off the page, but they all skate really well and they close gaps and they add pressure. And so I think that a guy like Matt Grizzlick is one of those types of guys, and he can be extremely valuable to this team.
Yes. And another guy on D that I think was started not really breaking out, but really came onto the scene last year. And I think is going to have a really good year this year is Connor Clifton.
Yeah, you're going to say that, yeah. Yes, I mean,
I think that he's another one. He's super offensive. He's pretty good in his own zone. Obviously needs some more time, but just his play style fits well with this team, jumping into the rush, all that fun stuff. I think he's due for not a breakout year to a breakout year in his own right. Because that's, I guess, yeah. It is subjective.
And people want to. I mean, it's easy to talk about the wins that Sweeney had this summer with Carlo and McAvoy. He's got Connor Clifton on this roster for $1 million on the cap for the next 3 years or 4 years, because he's got a year left on his current entry level deal. So, I mean, Connor Clifton in three years at $1 million on the cap could look like an absolute steal.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. And the other thing, and this leads me to my next thing, what happens when John Moore and Kevin Miller eventually come back? Because I don't think that unless Grizzlick or Clifton are playing badly, which I – Grizzlick's been fine. Clifton, you know –
Those two guys looked good in the Stanley Cup laughs in the Stanley yes. Cup final. So
there's no reason to take either of those out of the lineup.
Small sample size, but if you can perform at that level and on that stage, it gives me a lot of hope that you're going in the right direction.
Yes. I mean, Torrey Krug was essentially that in 2013, then coming back the next year. It was amazing on that stage in the Stanley Cup or in the playoffs. And then the next year, obviously now he's Torrey Krug and he's, you know, amazing and all that fun stuff. But I just, when they come back, I mean, obviously it's great to have defensive depth, but those two guys, you know, have earned the right in the NHL to play somewhere at least. And I don't think that their place, either of them, is Boston. And I think Kevin Miller's up after this year, if I'm correct on that. I know John Moore isn't. John Moore signed until like 2057.
Yeah, Miller's up after this year.
Yeah. But so
I could see Kevin Miller being a guy that moves at the trade deadline or something like that, or even before that, where you kind of swap it piece for piece.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he's good. People like him in the room, but I mean,
there's a lot of guys that are liked in that room. So I don't think Kevin Miller's really the guy who's holding it together.
Kevin Miller's the glue. If Kevin Miller played the Stanley Cup, they would have won.
But that being like on that note, like I don't want to make it seem like I'm trashing Kevin Miller, because at the beginning, like at the beginning of Kevin Miller's tenure, I was the biggest Kevin Miller hater in the world. But that guy has completely shut me up, made me eat my words, because he's been so solid. And I think that they really did miss him on the back end at the end of last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the heaviness the Blues played, it would have obviously helped the Bruins to have a guy like Kevin Miller on the back end, because they really, aside from kind of Char, I mean, he played with a broken jaw. There wasn't a lot of physicality back there. Real quick before we get to broader stuff, how do you think Coleman pans out on Krejci's right side? Is this another instance of, oh, we're going to wheel of right wingers on Krejci's right side, or is Coleman the answer to all this fun?
I don't think he's the answer. I think he's probably playing above his pay grade. I think that he's a nice player, but at this point, I think in an ideal situation, he's a bottom six forward, and he's probably a really good bottom six forward for you. And maybe playing with Krejci, because Krejci plays the caliber that he did last year, maybe he sort of brings out the best in Coleman. But ideally, if you're contending for a Stanley Cup, I think you want somebody better on that second line right wing.
100%. Yes. Yeah, unless Coleman breaks out in his 2011 Brad Marchand, you need somebody better on that right side if you're going to really contend for a Stanley Cup. And enough with the Krejci hate. This is unbelievable. He gets hurt in a preseason game. I have people all in my mentions because I tweeted the injury, saying that he's soft. You know, he never stays healthy. Played all but one game last year, and that was because they sat him out the last game. And then he played 82 in 16-17, I believe. Played all 82. So he's not soft. Or he doesn't always get injured. But
I do have a David Krejci take.
I
think that this is going to be his last year with the Bruins. I think that they're going to deal him after this season in order to re-sign Coyle. I think they're going to choose Coyle over David Krejci, and they're going to try to extend Coyle, and they're going to move Krejci's contract off the books.
And what do you think they obviously they have a ton of centers in the wings waiting, but if they trade Krejci, what are they getting back?
I think maybe like a younger forward who's obviously a downgrade, but you make up a little bit of a room on the cap and just get maybe like a bottom six forward or something like that, or just like a young promising like B or C level prospect to a team that really needs to upgrade down the middle and is willing to give up that piece for 1 year of David Krejci, possibly more.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad move. Picking Coyle over Krejci, Coyle's younger. And
if you can get him at term, you lock down your second line center for the next handful of years or whatever, instead of one more year of David Krejci. So yes. I think they really like Coyle. I think that might be a direction that they go in. But you obviously, I mean, there's a lot up in the air at this point, because you got to see how Coyle plays this year. And so I think right now I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
That's a good David Krejci take. I like that. Because it makes sense with Cassidy's system. Coyle seems to be better in it for some reason. Seems a little bit better in it than Krejci.
Six years younger than David Krejci. I think it's probably the smarter decision rather than giving David Krejci another contract.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. So Krejci, how old is Krejci? He's 34, right?
33. He might be entering his 34 season.
So he has the production to back up asking for a good amount of money on his next contract.
Yep.
The Bruins do not want to be wound down by another huge David Krejci contract going into, you know, when he in his late 30s. So yeah, I mean, that would be a completely smart move. And Coyle would most likely sign long term here, because
this from is here he likes it
did
here.
You know that? You know, yes. Did you know it's from Wayman?
I did.
So there's that. So I didn't expect that David Krejci take. I like it. I don't have a take as hot as that for this podcast, but maybe in the future. Team MVP, who's the most valuable player on the Bruins this season?
I think David Pastrnak. I think that he makes a jump. He could be, I could definitely see him being a 100-point guy around there. So, I mean, you got a guy who sniffs 100 points. He's probably your MVP. But, you know, I think that, you know, he's probably the sexiest pick for MVP. But, you know, if we're talking about about like who they absolutely need to be great to have success, I think Charlie McAvoy is at the top of that list because he's pretty much the guy holding it together on the back end defensively. Like we saw last year that Zdeno Chara started to look his age for the first time, or at least more frequently than I can ever remember him looking. Like he looked real old at points last year. And so if that sort of continues, like McAvoy is the guy holding that down. I think it's you sort of flip the script where Zdeno Chara was protecting Charlie McAvoy for a long time, and now Charlie McAvoy is sort of protecting Zdeno Chara. So I think that Charlie McAvoy, he really needs to step into being an elite back-end defenseman for this team to have success.
Let me ask you something, because I've been having this thought pop into my head for the past like year or so, and Chara obviously is great with the younger guys. He's been an amazing influence on that. He's great in the room, all that stuff. Is he hindering development on the left side on defense for the Bruins? Like a guy like Urho Vaakanainen, you might want to give him a look. I mean, Torrey Krug, I would say at this point is a number one defense, or a first line defenseman. Matt Grzelcyk is projecting to be a second line defenseman or a second pairing defenseman. Urho Vaakanainen, you give him his shot on the third pairing. Now you can't because you still have Chara there. Now, Chara's not going to be here a long time after this season. This could be his last. We don't really know. Mm-hmm. But is he kind of holding things up on the back end?
No, I don't think so. Because here's why. Like, you just made it to the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final last year with Zdeno Chara on your top pairing defense. Like, I know that I just said that he looked his age at points, but he didn't look at his age enough to prevent them or ruin their chances from getting to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. And in fact, when we thought that he was hurt and wasn't going to return, we were like, oh, this team is fucked. So he's still very, very important to the back end. And if you're a Vaakanainen, I think you're a Vaakanainen's a really talented, really promising player. If he was ready to make the jump, he'd be forcing a lot more of, you know, roster decisions right now than he is. Like, I think everybody's sort of resigned to the fact that he's going to start in the AHL. Maybe he's ready to make the jump at some point during the year, but he's really not making decisions super hard for anybody.
That is true. But
like he's been given opportunities, and I think that he's not necessarily like going in the wrong direction, but he's not pushing hard enough to make us really seriously ask the question of whether Zdeno Chara is holding things up.
Yeah, and the other thing is if Chara were to leave, you know, he plays against other teams' top offensive talent. He's been fine with it. Why have somebody come in who isn't really used to that and take all that? So just a thought that I've had. Maybe if Chara regresses a lot this year, maybe that becomes a legitimate thought. Who knows? My team MVP.
Chara's last year, too. I think he retires. Yeah. That's not much of a hot take.
No, but that'll be big news when it drops. I mean, I've lived my whole life with Zdeno Chara on defense. Well, not lived my whole life, but lived my whole watching the Bruins life with Zdeno Chara on defense. That'll be a little weird to see him.
I think they'll retire as number two.
Yes, they should. They 100% should. Team MVP for me, Brad Marchand. I think it's either Marchand or Pastrnak because the health of Patrice Bergeron is sort of – no one really knows. He's got this groin issue that he's had for years, had a PRP shot. He missed a substantial amount of time last season, and it was sort of on Pastrnak and Marchand to make up for it there. I think that it's one of those two guys. I'm just picking Marchand because you got to pick Pastrnak. But Marchand's going to have to be, you know, more of a leadership role in that line.
I think another reason why I'm going with Pastrnak too is because I think there's a significant possibility that he plays on the second line. At some point during the season, maybe it's an extended period of time. Because again, I think that second line gap is an issue. And it's unlikely that Bergeron and Marchand get split up because they're always going to have success together, no matter who else is the third piece. So if Pastrnak slides down and gives them more depth and makes them more dangerous throughout the top six, that could be huge for the Bruins.
Yeah. I mean, I would be willing to bet that Cassidy obviously switches his lines around a ton in game. There's going to be a lot of games where you're going to see the second period comes around and he's going to roll out DeBrusk, Krejci, Pastrnak, and he'll throw up a guy like Heinen on the first line to play with Bergeron and Marchand. That's sort of what I thought they should do, because it's, I think, a little bit more set in stone. But they didn't. But it's the beginning. They haven't not done it yet. I mean,
that's true.
It could happen. It could happen. It still could for the opening game. Who knows?
They haven't done or not done anything yet.
I'm just assuming. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that that lineup come out mid-season, and because Cassidy's always rolled. That's why it's never set. It's not like Cassidy goes, we're going with Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak for the rest of the year. Like, it might be for the first game, but it could change by the second game. So Right. Who knows? But I think the right move is moving Pastrnak down and putting a guy like a Heinen on the top line. Biggest drop-off on the Bruins. Who has the biggest drop-off? Because I have one that is kind of a hot take, but it isn't because of his injuries. Patrice Bergeron. If he misses a lot of time, I mean, obviously his production will go down, but then you have a guy who's playing with an injury. This groin thing has not gone away. He's 34 years old. At some point, it's got to catch up.
But if Brad Marchand's your team MVP and your biggest drop-off is Patrice Bergeron, how does that work?
Well, that would work because he's the point of Marchand there is he's making up for the lost production of Patrice Bergeron, especially if he's out. So that's sort of why I have that. That's why I would have picked Pastrnak or Marchand, because you're making up for that loss in the middle. That's not to say Bergeron's going to be horrible this year. Okay. That's just to say if he's battling this injury, I wouldn't be surprised to see. And I know he's dealt with it before, but he's 34, he's a year older now. He missed some significant time last year. Wouldn't be surprised to see him miss some more time. But again, when he's in, he averages like a point per game. So that would be my pick for like real significant. Because if Bergeron is not healthy and he's not at the level that he's been at in past years, you have a real problem on your hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go with either David Krejci or Zdeno Chara. And the Chara one is sort of for obvious reasons. He's just old. And again, we saw him last year take a step backwards. I don't think that he was as consistent. He looked very, very bad at points. And he's just a year older. And I think that there's maybe a chance that we see that a little bit more frequently this year. And then David Krejci, I just think that, you know, he had a career year last year. He played really, really well for almost the entire year. I don't know if I see that him rising back up to that level again for the entire year. We've seen him sort of deal with inconsistency. And again, he doesn't have a consistent guy on the right wing. So I think that could be an issue.
My other drop off would have been Yaroslav Halak, but he looked really good in the preseason. And I'm not 100% certain. I mean, if he has a real drop off year, you're in trouble, because now your Rask's workload's way up and he doesn't have the rest that he's clearly been needing for the playoffs the past couple of years. So that would sort of be my secondary pick. If that actually happened, that would be a really big issue. I already gave my opinion on where I think the Bruins will finish this year and where I think they finish in the playoffs. I know I've sounded super negative this entire podcast, but whatever. You gotta sometimes be pessimistic. Where do you think, if you look in your crystal ball, I know it's a long time away. I know we're not even in the regular season yet, but we're going to do it anyways. Where do they finish in the playoffs?
So I think they're going to finish third in the division, and I think it's going to be very difficult to beat the Leafs in the first round when they have home ice advantage in Toronto. So you know what? I'm going to say they get bounced in the first round this year.
Spreading it everywhere. Look at me. I think the Lightning are going to go to the Stanley Cup, because you know, you come off getting swept in the first round last year after winning the President's Trophy. Just absolutely humiliated. It's hard to see them not making an insane push this year. And it's just kind of adding up for the Bruins to be out in the first round the year after. I don't know what it is. I just have a weird feeling that it might happen. And maybe I'll be eating crow. Maybe I'll be completely wrong by the end of the year. I mean, I have people on Twitter saying they're not going to make the playoffs. So who really knows, right?
I sort of felt the same way last year, too, where I said the Bruins were going to finish third. And I even had my doubts going into the first round against the Leafs. Like, I was like, okay, I know that the Leafs have the skeletons in their closet. But I'm not whistling past the graveyard. This is a really good team. And they, you know what? They lost in game seven, and they had a chance to close it out in game six, and they kind of blew it. But they took that series seven games, and it was really close. And Nazem Kadri didn't help them out very much. So I think that they have a better team this year. They're going to have William Nylander is going to be a lot better. And so it's a really strong Leafs team. I'm pretty afraid of that team. I wouldn't take them lightly.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I don't like Toronto fans. I really don't.
Trust me, me either.
And I know you don't. And it's kind of a shared sentiment among everybody in Boston. Like, the Leafs, Toronto fans, just annoying. And this whole Austin Matthews thing is just so fun to make fun of because, like, look at what just happened. But they're a good team. They're a good team. And this might be the year. This might be the year they make it past the first round. Not saying they win in the cup, saying this could be the year they make it past the first round. I just would not be surprised if that were to happen. So, yeah, that's season preview. I don't think we left any stone unturned. I think we kind of hit everything. Is there anything else that needs to be addressed? We addressed the seats. We addressed everything. I don't think we missed anything, did we?
No, I think I got out all my takes and my predictions and things like that. So, I want to say this. The Canadians are going to be pretty good this year, and I'm excited for that. Like, I know that we're supposed to hate the Canadians and stuff, but, like, Canadians being relevant and being solid is very good for hockey, especially around here. Like, I like getting excited up for Bruins Canadians games, and I think that there's a chance that there's a little bit more fire or a little bit more firewood thrown onto that fire this year, and I'm excited for it.
Yes, and the other thing, and I think addressing the Canadians is smart because that's sort of like the Lakers in basketball or the Yankees in baseball and the Red Sox in baseball for that matter. You need these big market teams, these historic teams, you need them to be good. It doesn't feel right when the Canadians come in here way out of the playoffs, completely beaten, and kind of just – it's a lay an egg type of game. They have a lot of good young talent. You know, you have additions like Nick Suzuki and you know, Carey Price on the back end. I mean, this guy at some point, I mean, he's a Bruins killer. But at some point, you know, he's got to get his team to the cup final. You got to think at some point it might happen. And then you have Claude behind the bench.
Right. Off the top of your head, how many points did the Canadians miss the playoffs by last year?
Wasn't it like... It was close, wasn't it? It was like six, right?
Two. They missed by 2 points.
Really?
They were a win away from making the playoffs last year, and I don't think anybody really talks about that. Like I remember when I went back and I looked for my season preview stuff, I was like, holy shit, the Canadians were really close to making the playoffs last year.
They almost did it. I don't remember that. I mean, maybe because for us, that feels like so far before that. Like, as Bruins people, we don't – like, we didn't never to focus on, like, missing or making the playoffs. It was, like, where they were going to be seated. So maybe we missed that, but I didn't remember that it was literally, like, a win away.
Because the Columbus Blue Jackets were so close to missing the playoffs. It came down to, like, the final game of the year, and the Canadians were that other team.
That's right. Huh.
It's insane. Like, that's what I'm saying. The Canadians are a sneaky, sneaky good team.
Yes, they have Max Domi. They got Thomas Tatar is still there. Yeah. And Shea Weber, I mean, I know he's older and stuff, but I don't think he's injured right now, which means he'll probably be playing. He'll probably be good. And the Blue Jackets were just going to go off last year. Are probably not going to be in the playoff picture.
No, they're going to tank. I think they're going to be the worst team in the Metropolitan Division this year.
Oh, yeah. The Metro is a whole nother thing. Like, There's a chance the Hurricanes could go from being the representative of the Metro to being like near the bottom. I know they're good.
Oh, but no, like, I think the Hurricanes are going to win the Metro this year. I think
are
they're
you serious?
Win. Yeah, I think the Hurricanes are going to win the Metro. I think they're going to be one or two with the Capitals, and I think from there I could see any combination of like 3 through 6.
Really?
Yeah, in the Metro. Like, I think it's the toughest one to predict, but I think the Penguins are due for a step back. I think the Islanders are going to take a massive step back just because they're not going to get the quality goaltending that they did last year.
That's fair.
Columbus lost almost everybody. They lost Shane Panarin. I mean, they still got some nice players there, but I think that they took a massive step back. I think the Flyers
Bobrovsky.
Yeah, the Flyers are going to be – the Columbus has a starting goaltender who's never finished with a save percentage above 900. It's so – I mean, very dire, I think, if you're Columbus. And you look at Philadelphia, it looks okay. New York took some big steps forward. They got some nice pieces there. I don't think they're ready yet, but, like, they're better. New Jersey's a lot better if they can get the goaltending. So, like, there's a lot of question marks as to where those teams finish.
Yes, but I could also totally see, because that division is so tough, one of those teams is going to flop. You're going to have absolutely. Like the Devils. Absolutely. It'll be like someone like the Devils where the goaltending doesn't work out and PK Subban, you know, doesn't really live up to those expectations, or Jack Hughes. I mean, Jack Hughes has been nasty, but something goes amiss there, or something with the Rangers with, you know, Capo Caco or Panarin. I don't know. I mean, there's going to be, and the other thing that's interesting to watch, Carter Hart. I'm interested to see, because there's so many stories of this is the savior, this is the kid, this is the goalie the Flyers have been looking for 20-something years, ever since Hextall. I'm very interested to see how this plays out, because it would be so Philadelphia to have this kid come up, he's the next savior, and he just fucking flops. I could totally see it happen. But
I think he's going to be pretty good, but that defense still has its issues, so, They got to help him out a little bit, but I think Carter Hart's going to be okay.
I think he'll be fine, but I could totally see it going the other way. The Hurricanes thing, though, does surprise me. I know they're good. They're young. They are stacked on the back end, even after losing Justin Falk. But the goaltending, I just sort of wonder about. You got Mrazek and McElhaney.
I think it's a very fair concern, but I think that their defense is good enough to sort of minimize. I don't think their goaltending is going to be, like, god-awful.
That's true.
You look at – I mean, the Sharks were – I mean, I think that the Hurricanes have a much less talented roster than the Sharks, but the Sharks were second in the Pacific last year with league worst goaltending.
Martin Jones. So, and there will be, yeah.
I don't think the Hurricanes goaltending is going to be that bad. And I think their defense is really, really good. And they've got a lot of talent up front with, you know, Sebastian Aho is like a stud now. Teuvo Teravainen was really good for them last year. I think Andrei Svechnikov is going to score like 35 or 40 goals for them this year. And then you obviously have Niederreiter. Like, they've got some good forwards. So I really do think that Carolina is going to have a very strong regular season. They're not a one and done.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. It's going to be a long
now
season.
This has become a Bruins season preview, and now it's a Metropolitan Division season.
Why don't we just do every division? No, there's so much to talk about with this whole season, and it's crazy that it's like here. It's here, and because right. This comes out Tuesday, season starts Wednesday. So there you go. This should cover it all for you. But is there, before I let you go, is there anything you want to plug?
No, I mean, the podcast, Listen to Brunch, but my writing's on cbssports.com. I'm also going to be doing like some CBS Sports HQ stuff on cbssports.com throughout the season. So, I know I just said that I wasn't going to have anything to plug, and I just plug like three things, but there you go.
There you go. Right. Do that. So anyways, Pete, thank you. We'll see how these predictions kind of go out over the course of the year. We'll put them out. Maybe they'll be right. Maybe they'll be wrong. If they're right, we'll talk about it all the time. If they're wrong,
we'll ignore
maybe
it.
Maybe we won't. We'll pretend it never happened. But anyways, for CLNS Media, I'm Evan Marinofsky. Enjoy the start of the regular season and have a great rest of your week.